This episode was recorded on March 11th, 2020.
Welcome to The Wrap, a Warren Averett podcast for business leaders designed to help you access vital business information and trends when you need it so you can listen, learn, and then get on with your day. Time is tight. That's why our advisors have wrapped up today's most timely topics into a podcast with actionable advice. Now, let's get down to business.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, Kim.
How are you today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. Normally, I start by saying how excited I am for this episode we're about to record, and today is a little bit of a different type of episode.
Agreed.
More of a response to something that's happening currently in our communities, and I think we even would use the word emergency recording of a podcast episode.
I would agree with that.
So, I'm looking forward to the conversation,
absolutely,
but I don't think I would describe it as excited about this episode.
Agreed.
So today we are really fortunate to have two guests with us. One is one of our members from our tax group based out of Birmingham, Will Adderholt. Will leads our construction and real estate practice group. So welcome, Will.
Good morning.
We're glad to have you.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
And we're also fortunate to have one of our clients with us today. We have Brownlee Curry, who is with Curry & Company. And Curry & Company is a wholesale manufacturer of home furnishings, including lighting, furniture, and accent pieces. They're a 32-year-old company, and they have over 550 professionals around the globe. And you'll get a sense of why we invited Brownlee in that Curry & Company's headquarters are in Atlanta, but they have operations, partners, suppliers in China, Indonesia, India. They are a global company, and we felt like Brownlee's perspective on this conversation was very important.
Absolutely.
So, Brownlee, I think it'd be great if we could start by you telling us a little bit more about your business.
Sure. So, I'm Brownlee Curry, the president and CEO of Curry & Company of Atlanta, Georgia. We are a wholesale supplier to interior designers and retailers of home furnishings items and accessories. So we focus on lighting, fine furniture, some upholstery, and accessory items. We have a workforce of about 120 here in Atlanta, Georgia, you know, split between sales service and light manufacturing and assembly. We have a partnership factory in the Philippines where we've got about 450 employees kind of given the day. And then we run a trading company in Hong Kong as well as a representative office in southern China to coordinate all of our activities there and work with several captive manufacturers in southern China. And then we also have an office in New Delhi in India and do a fair amount of work in Indonesia and Vietnam as well.
So clearly your company and your business is affected when there is a disruption to the global supply chain. And so what are you seeing, hearing in terms of that impact?
Well, sure. So the impact personally started for me in late January. Because I don't know if everybody is familiar with this, but as you end the year, your business year in China especially, one tends to have a wrap-up meeting for the year. You need to have a New Year's luncheon and then quite send everybody home with money in their pocket.
Okay.
And it's something best done for your employees personally. And so I was there about January 15 to January 17. And I was on the train with the general manager of our Hong Kong office headed back to Hong Kong from southern China. And she says, look, it's time to go. This thing in Wuhan appears to be getting serious.
Oh, wow.
So it does, in fact, feel personal. And I had my 79-year-old father with me on that trip.
Wow.
And, you know, so now it was one of these, I may need to get the old man out of here moments.
Wow.
But what we've really seen from a business perspective is I think most of you are reasonably familiar with the business cycle in China, the long Lunar New Year holiday, which if one plans for it, really I think is a system that works just fine.
Right.
But we saw that people just couldn't come back to work from that Lunar New Year holiday. And so travel has been so restricted in China that the return to normalcy has been exceedingly slow. And so we should have been back to work somewhere around February the 9th. And we really didn't see people getting back to work at all until early March.
Wow.
And what we're seeing, you know, so that's an additional almost 3 weeks worth of holiday time. And then the other piece of it is that most of the suppliers that we're working with, I think the best performing right now maybe has 60% of their employees back to work.
Wow.
And so everybody's capacity is stretched really tight.
That's crazy. And just to think that, you know, hoping you plan for something like that, right? And that's what probably is eating at you more and more is just the planning perspective.
Well, so I have to say our business in one sense is a little old fashioned. But since we do so much direct import activity, we've got some understanding that just-in-time inventory systems don't work when you're dealing with lead times this long. Mm. And so our world, 75 to 90 days is a great lead time. You know, 120 days is something that you're going to manage around more commonly. And so we plan and carry enough stock to service customers because the onus is on us to service the customer at this stage of the game. We carry enough stock where we can mitigate some of that disruption. I mean, we are really beginning to see people come back to work. We were having a sidebar conversation earlier in this room, and we're seeing people come back to work now. I think everybody is going to see their lead times lengthen over the next couple of months. But in terms of consumer goods, I think financial markets are already reacting to this near instantly. In terms of consumer goods, availability of goods, and prices of consumer goods, we're not going to feel the big effects of this stuff until May in the United States. So there's a lag time to all of this that doesn't reflect what the markets are doing right now.
And it's scary to think about what the markets will respond to then too, right? Because it's almost going to be a 1-2 punch, that becoming number two. And how do we handle that? So Will, from businesses that you're talking to, and we've talked about the market aspect of this epidemic, what is it from a business perspective you're seeing, you're hearing that is going to be the economic response to this?
Yeah, it's going to be prevalent in every industry, really. It's I had a CEO meeting roundtable yesterday, and so the group is represented by, you know, 18 different businesses, and every single one of them was affected by this. I mean, it was really astounding to me to see, you know, not just direct importers, but even service businesses related to travel. One of the companies they manufacture displays for trade shows.
Of course. Yeah, that would have to be affected, right?
Right. So they've had 16 trade shows get canceled in the last week.
Wow.
So, you know, just the breadth of this is going to be pretty astounding in businesses that you wouldn't traditionally think would be affected by something like this.
Well, even I was just having a conversation, you know, our firm represents a significant amount of nonprofit clients. And there are large nonprofits that have galas every year. And we've had two clients that were scheduled to have galas in March that have just canceled them because their large corporate sponsors say, we can't ask our employees to go to a large gathering, so we aren't going to send anyone. And so now nonprofits are having to scramble and figure out, if this gala is where we fundraise 30% of our annual budget, how are we going to do that?
Well, if I can jump in here real quickly, you know, we're having the same discussions in our industry right now, which is we are trade show driven.
That's right.
And the major trade fair for, you know, one of two of the year is coming up in April. And the mystery that everyone wants to know the answer for is the show going to go off? And at the moment, yeah, we don't know until we know, but I think that piece of uncertainty is really weighing on at least our industry.
Yeah, and even the consumer uncertainty. You know, we're in this time frame with social media networks. You know, every news network's extremely polarized, and just, you know, people going to Costco and not being able to buy toilet paper you know, just the effect of that on the consumer and employees is just, it's going to be remarkable.
Well, if you think about it, it's been since, what, the oil crisis of the late 70s when America faced a real challenge around the availability of consumer goods. We are not accustomed to not being able to get what we want right now.
We're used to Amazon Prime delivery within an hour at our doorstep, whatever we need.
That's exactly right. And so the question is, how is the consumer going to react when those behaviors are disrupted? It's really a tough one to ponder.
So I know that this is not, I mean, you alluded to the oil crisis, but this is not the first epidemic, pandemic that the global world has seen. How would you compare and contrast this to, say, the SARS epidemic that we experienced, you know, 15 or so years ago?
Yeah, so I wasn't personally working overseas as much when SARS, you know, impacted everybody, particularly in Hong Kong. But what a lot of my employees especially have told me, who did live through that period in Asia, was the news about SARS was withheld until much later. And so the mainland Chinese government did mount a pretty large response to SARS, but only after they had contained that story perhaps way too long. And so there has been much greater transparency on the part of Beijing. Not that they're completely transparent. They've just been much more transparent than they have in the past about what was happening with these kind of pandemic situations.
Interesting. So Brownlee, maybe you can tell us a little bit more about how you and your company have been directly impacted by this threat.
Sure. So we've gone through the scenario of sort of what's happened in February and March, particularly in China. And we all know that that's really impactful to us here. And we are beginning to see, or at least the stirrings of an urgent response here in America, or at least this morning, it certainly is feeling that way. But I don't think what we're talking about well or adequately is we're beginning to see this thing kind of boil over to other locations, especially around Asia and especially around the world. For example, I don't tend to do a lot of trade in northern Italy, but I know that we're now seeing cases of these things in the Philippines. We're seeing cases of these things in India. There are cases of this, for example, all over Thailand. And so while it does appear China has this stuff under control, we're going to see the spread of the disease, you know, mushrooming around the world. The other part of it is that there are a lot of factories in Vietnam, in the Philippines, in India, for example, that depend on Chinese components to put their goods together. You know, so China really is the component supplier to the world. I have to say nobody does that better. And so you're going to begin to see part shortages all over Asia as people have depleted their stocks and are waiting for their next shipments, which are going to be long delayed out of China. And so I think you're going to see this thing really ripple around in ways that maybe people hadn't first thought.
And that plays to your May-June timeframe, right, that we've been talking about. Is that's really, that's what I see as the issue, and that's what we got to ramp up for and be ready for.
Yeah, and it's not always stuff that you would necessarily anticipate. You can't get a container right now in India, and it's a positioning issue. The containers haven't been flowing from China and haven't been flowing for long enough right now that good luck getting a piece of equipment in a number of other places around the world.
Yeah, I had a client explain to me their operation is in Vietnam, but what they are manufacturing, one component part comes from China. So they had production until they ran out of that one part, and they're at a standstill.
Yeah.
Because they cannot produce anything more until they get the shipment of the one part. And it's things like that. And he said to me, no matter what it is that you're talking about, to have something that doesn't have a part that is coming from China is very, very rare. And so I think the magnitude of understanding how that impacts the global manufacturing distribution supply chain is significant. And so to your point, we haven't been hit with that right now, but in a couple of months, there will be an impact to that. And how does the market respond? How do the consumers respond? And how does that impact smaller companies, right? So a larger company may be able to float a line of credit or have investment backing that can float them for 2 or 3 months of a delay, because we think that this is not that you lose the sale, it's just a delay in the sale. But can a small business absorb that delay?
Yeah, if you're a small business and scrapping for cash, that thought to do what we did in February, which is we went out to every one of our American distributors of key, you know, critical components, and we bought an extra 2 months worth of supply, you know, of most of those parts. From my perspective, it was money well spent,
right?
Just because we want to serve customers. On the other hand, if you didn't have that cash laying in the bank, that's going to be really difficult. So a month from now, you won't be able to do that because all those parts are coming from China and the shelves will be bare. So there was, you know, a limited moment of opportunity and you had to have the cash right then and there. And I'm not sure a lot of small businesses were thinking in that way.
You know, Will, you work a lot with some turnaround companies, right, who are strapped for cash a lot, and you have to kind of help them through that process. Is there any benefits that you've seen from those types of companies that you've worked with that could be helpful in a situation like Brownlee's talking about?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, in my mind, cash is king, right? Always. So it's a lot of people's first reaction is to say, okay, well, I got to keep profitability on my P&L, right? How can I cut overhead? How can I still make sales? My P&L has to show a profit, right? But the key, I think, in an epidemic like this or in any situation really where you've got some sort of a potential distress in your business is to think about cash flow. You know, the paradigm has to shift a little bit into not just what does my P&L show at the bottom line, but what does my cash flow look like?
Yeah, so, I talk about we protect that balance sheet.
Absolutely.
And so there's a management of cash flow, and then that strong balance sheet will carry you when the P&L might not.
That's right. And even further down the road, you know, you mentioned just the ripple effect that's going to come from this in the supply chain down the road. You know, even if you can, you know, make some tweaks in your business, stay profitable, keep your cash flow right now, you know, just the macroeconomic effects of what could happen if, you know, today your sales slow down. Well, we all know, unfortunately, our customers don't pay us the day we make the sale, unless we're very fortunate to be in a business that they do. And so, you know, even when the market corrects and your business normalizes, you're probably still going to have a 30 to 60 day cash flow crunch that you need to be able to manage through. So just getting your arms around that, you know, and getting educated and really understanding it is really the first step to developing a plan to get through it.
So the markets are responding now. Brownlee's worried about 3 months from now. You're worried about 6 months from now. I got nothing. I mean, this every time I talk to somebody, this just grows exponentially.
I woke up this morning, you know, and read the Wall Street Journal, you know, and now we're talking about a payroll tax cut and even extending the April 15th due date for tax returns. You know, you've just got all these forces right now. We're in an election year. Like I said, you've got media that's just very polarized, social media, very polarized, and everybody's just looking for that story, right? And so all these forces are just sort of compounding on each other, and everybody seems to feel like they need to do something, right?
You're driven to react.
Driven to react, absolutely. That's a great way to say that. And so, and every day you wake up and it's different. So there's just this extreme feeling of uncertainty of what's coming, and markets always react to risk. They price in risk all the way down to the consumer, even though may not necessarily be, you know, feel that or say that complex, but you do. You react to risk in your own life. That's what drives consumer behavior. And so it's just this uncertainty. It's extreme right now, and people are just very concerned about where it's going to go.
Want to receive a monthly newsletter with Wrap topics? Head on over to warrenaverett.com/thewrap and subscribe to our email list to have it delivered right to your inbox.
This is the fifth podcast now where I can say, get comfortable with being uncomfortable. I mean, because that's really what we keep talking about in almost every aspect of a business is you just got you're going to get out of your comfort zone. You just got to get comfortable with that.
Well, you talked at length about the importance of cash flow and projecting cash flow needs and having cash flow on hand and being able to look ahead and determine when should you be opportunistic, as Brownlee gave an example of using that cash because you're going to need that later, the what you're buying, versus stockpiling enough cash for planning for there to be a disruption and you've got something in your savings to get you through that delay. But in terms of continuity of the services or the products that you provide to your customers, what should companies be doing in terms of operations to protect that?
You know, let me first say, it's no different just because of this situation. You know, every business should have a disaster recovery plan, business continuity plan, but now it's more critical than ever to put it into practice, really. But you know, there and it varies by industry, right? If you're a distributor or manufacturer, you've got to worry about your inventory and not just what's on your shelves today, but think further down your supply chain. You know, I was meeting with a client a couple of weeks ago, and they're a distributor for goods that are produced in the United States. And I said, well, you know, how is this going to affect you? He said, well, it's not. We produce everything in the United States. I said, well, what about all those little electrodes and sensors and monitors? You know, I feel fairly certain that those are produced in China or elsewhere. You know, you thought he got, you know, kicked in the face. I was very surprised by that. So, you know, hopefully people are thinking through that now, but you've just got to think further down your supply chain and look at what are your critical processes, what are your critical products and procedures that you have to go to that could really, you know, affect your business in a really bad way. You know, and then you've got the, if you're in a service business, right, how can you, number one, get to your customers to serve them, and how can your people get to work or work from home? How can they serve those customers? All right, so you have to have a plan for that. And then also, you know, scheduling production. Another thing that came up yesterday in my meeting was, you know, do people have legal risk if they have travel scheduled or if they have a business that's they run a production line, they have to have people there. You know, is there any sort of legal risk to them telling their employees that they still need to come in to work or travel to a conference? You know, obviously we don't know the answer to that, but all of those things are good, prudent things for people to be thinking about. As with respect to just business continuity.
And I would say I usually talk about business continuity from the technology side, but business continuity is really just trying to make sure that when a disruption happens, whether it's this, whether it's a tornado, whether it's a natural disaster, whether it's losing a key member, the thing that has been interesting to see over the last couple weeks is the companies that are communicating correctly, hey, we were prepared for this, and this is what we are doing. We have put into place this plan that we have thought about for years. And it's been refreshing, if you can say that, to see companies responding in a positive way. Walmart saying, we're ready to pay folks that don't come to work for another 2 weeks more than we're used to. They're ready for that. They knew that was going to happen at some point. And you could name any other company that's out there that's preparing for that. They've tested that continuity plan. And I think that's the bigger piece, is not just thinking about it, but also, hey, let's see if this works. There's a company that sent everybody home with their laptops, and it was kind of worldwide, and it was over 10,000 people. And they said, turn on all your computers at the exact same time from your house. Let's make sure that we can still run our business that way, because we haven't prepared for that. We haven't tested that. And they were trying to test if that occurs in the next couple of weeks.
From the small business perspective, you have to get it on paper, because that's what makes it real. And then you can start driving out that communications piece of it. And so we're doing all the same stuff that you're speaking of, which is testing what does it look like if almost my entire office workforce works from home. We've got a plan in place for what is the bare minimum of employees to make sure that we're still serving customers. You know, we do like to presume that we're still going to have customers to serve, and that being able to carry on, you know, through this period will benefit us relatively well. But it is about getting those plans on paper, being able to communicate them, and then act on them.
So you talk about the workforce a little bit. What are you doing, or what are y'all seeing companies do to protect their workforce and kind of ensure that continued productivity, and not just protecting your business from a service perspective, but the humans, right? The people that work for you.
Well, and so actually one of our discussion points have been, what's been the personal impact of this whole thing? Look, the personal impact has been, I actually talk to members of my China team most nights via WeChat. And so the personal piece of this thing has been, no, I'm still in my hometown, locked in my family apartment and can't go anywhere. And so, you know, that there's a real human face to what's going on here that I think, particularly we were talking about the 2003 SARS epidemic, that personal face wasn't quite there. That interaction just wasn't as easy as it is 17 odd years later. And so that really brought the point home. You know, we're working on all of the things one would expect, significant work from home options for the workforce, really looking at who sort of an essential employee is in the distribution center and in our manufacturing areas. And what are the processes that we have to do in place, and what are the processes we can do from a remote location? And then we are testing all of the remote location systems really over the last couple days, so that we know if that moment comes where you have to engage in social isolation, we can carry out 90% of our business activities and not miss a beat.
It sounds like you're on top of it.
We're trying.
Yeah. And, you know, another, read a lot of articles and talked to business owners about this. And I think one thing that people are trying to do is get creative, you know, think outside the box. What if, from a scheduling standpoint, can we go to every other day in the office, or if we have to have essential, you know, critical employees? You know, and the other thing is to think about, you know, critical processes, you know, when you talk about the human impact on your employees, well, you got to pay them, right? So how are we going to get payroll done?
Yeah. Well, and honestly, in terms of the human impact, you know, paid time off and sick leave has really come up as a big issue, you know, particularly with if you got an hourly workforce. And so we are strongly, literally, I will be working on this plan later today, but we are strongly looking at creating a bank of exceptional paid time off so that people don't feel compelled that they have to show up for work if they've got that sick child, or if one of the school systems are closed, or there's a family member who's ill. Because creating the mechanism for people who might not be healthy to stay home and not, you know, be dealt that economic impact, I think is really important as we're dealing with this.
That's a great idea.
So we've talked at length during this entire conversation around the potential impacts to businesses, but Will, what actions do you suggest that businesses take to be prepared for those potential financial impacts?
The most important in my mind is to know your numbers. You know, if you, that gives you a sense of security. You know, if you take the alternate approach and you don't know your numbers, and when I say know your numbers, I mean from a variable cost, contribution margin, you know, profitability by product, service line, revenue stream, you know, really knowing what each product or service line contributes to your overhead. If you don't know those numbers right now, I could see that only increasing your level of stress and uncertainty as far as what actions you should take, right? You have to kind of know where you are to know where you're going. And so, you know, if people don't know that, they need to. And then you can take that data, you know, if you know what you make by product and you know which products you're likely to be out of or have a hard time getting built or made or bought or sold, you know, that allows you to then stress test your financials. So project that out. What does it really look like 2 weeks, 1 month, 2 months from now, both from a profit and a cash flow standpoint, to really come back and reverse engineer into some good decisions? You know, how much do I really need to cut my overhead? Can I afford to keep people on if I can't sell these products?
But I think the other piece is, you have to be a little wary of the hunker down mentality.
Absolutely.
And so there are going to be opportunities created because of this. And so, for example, if you are going to be able, if we're going to begin to see as many stockouts as I think we're likely to around the industry, we're probably going to have a great opportunities for customers to be reselecting products that they might not otherwise. And so I think sort of my moment of optimism is, look, I think if we can manage ourselves well and manage our inventories well, plan that production really carefully, I think we can be in service on some core product lines and maybe be able to pick up some reselection from the customers. And so, you know, I don't think you want to hunker down that hard. You want to be able to look at for where the opportunity is going to be out there.
Brownlee, I appreciate that optimism in some of this discussion. That's a nice way to think outside the box and kind of take advantage of what comes your way.
The other thing I would say is, you know, we stress to our clients planning and, you know, tax planning and year-end planning, and we're coming up on, you know, a deadline for tax returns to be filed, which may get extended. We're not sure. But this is a planning opportunity, and there are things that you can take advantage of if you plan. So we always stress to make sure that you're using that proactive approach, and, you know, bury your head in the sand and hope for the best is never the plan, right? And so meet with your advisors and get their input and really think through, as Will said, stress test your financials and, you know, what opportunities do you have if there are opportunities to spend some cash right now to take advantage of some great opportunities, or in a tax situation, you know, if your numbers change and it's a year that you can be opportunistic from that approach, there's always an opportunity. So the more proactive and the more prepared you are, then the better off you're going to be.
Absolutely. It just comes, again, it's that it allows you to not have that hunker down mentality, which I loved your comment there, Brownlee, but allows you to be informed and make good informed decisions based on fact and not just gut feel. Far too often we see that taking place.
Another part of making sure that you're prepared, and we discussed this, Paul, when we did the disaster preparedness podcast that we that was specifically recorded in response to a natural disaster.
Absolutely.
But it definitely applies here too. You know, part of having your ducks in a row, part of being prepared is making sure you have talked to your insurance advisor and you have the appropriate insurance policies and you understand what your terms are. You know, does this apply or not? What is your exposure? You need to have those conversations, and when you're in the midst of a disaster or a crisis is not the time, right? And so I think the lessons learned out of this are, if you're sitting here scratching your head saying, I don't know if I have those policies, I don't know if they apply here, this is a good opportunity for you to have one of those meetings and make sure that you understand all of your options and you've made good decisions and you know what those decisions are.
Right. And that goes back to the other podcast. I love how all of our podcasts start to kind of intertwine, the one where we talked about the advisors you need to have, and you need to have constant conversations with those that we had with Jake and Dorothy.
Yes.
It is interesting just to see them all intertwine, and you got to get those advisors. You got to talk to them. Just having an insurance policy doesn't help. You got to know what type you have. And
that's right.
So Brownlee, here on The Wrap, we'd like to wrap it up in 60 seconds. What's that one thing that we've talked about today that you really want our listeners to walk away with?
Well, what I'd like to say is you're seeing an immediate impact in the financial markets, but I think the true, what I would call Main Street economic impact, is going to be slower rolling, and that stuff that we're going to see in May and June and beyond. And so there's this moment we're in right now that we all need to be dealing with as sort of business owners, business operators. But the other part of it is we need to be planning for the next 6 to 9 months to be different.
Paul, I would say in general, make informed decisions. And that ripples to a lot of things, even from your, you know, seek out true facts with respect to the virus and its impact from a health standpoint. Don't rely on the news channels. You know, seek out government published data. And then secondly, make informed decisions about your business. Don't make knee-jerk reactions from a position of fear or anxiety. You know, really take the time to know your numbers and make informed decisions from those numbers, from those facts.
Brownlee, Will, thank you both for being here.
Thanks,
and sharing your perspectives. And I have a feeling that there's going to be a part two to this conversation, perhaps in Q3 of later this year, but we appreciate your time.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for letting me be here.
And that's a wrap. If you're enjoying the podcast, please leave a review on your streaming platform. To check out more episodes, subscribe to our podcast series, or make a suggestion for other topics to cover, visit us at warrenaverett.com/thewrap.